Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It is not the easiest or most comfortable subject to talk about, but if you are a parent who is not in a relationship with the other parent, you need to understand how child support works. August is Child Support Awareness Month, and there's a lot you need to know. My guests are Sophia Hollis-Ticer, D.C. Deputy Attorney General for Child Support Services, and Samantha Phillips-Chester, Director of Prince George's County Child Support. If you have a comment, if you have a question, and I'm sure you do, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sophia, Samantha, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Let me start with you, Sophia. I want to start at the ground floor of this conversation. How does child support work for the health and welfare of the children?
So again, that's a very good question. Mr. Fisher, thank you so much again for having me here. So child support, we know, lifts families and children out of poverty. And so we know that child support is a critical aspect of a child's rearing, and it significantly impacts a child's life. It provides financial stability and security for the child, and it also helps to ensure that the child has access to the necessary resources for their development and well-being. And so, therefore, it's important that we all understand, it's crucial for parents, guardians, and policymakers, the importance of child support and the laws that may impact it. So, as you know, CSSC is under the leadership of Attorney General Brian Schwab. And so he is concerned and prioritizes public safety and our children and the well-being of our children. And so in order to make D.C. a better place for all who live here, he is focused on promoting and celebrating healthy and successful youth development. So what that means is he supports child and family-centered programs such as CSSD. He's advancing a youth-positive narrative focused on achievements and successes of D.C.'s young people. And so that's the importance of CSSD. We want to make sure our children are financial and have the stability that they need to grow. Mm-hmm. And so that's the importance of child support.
Samantha, this is obviously, or it can be, not always, but it can be a contentious issue. Again, starting from the ground floor, let us say that a woman is expecting, and the father of the child decides that he does not want to participate in the health and welfare of the child, does not want to offer financial support. What should that mother do? And let's say she tries to, after the child is born, tries to work it out with him over the next, year or so, and he just refuses to do it. What are the next steps to filing child support?
So, thank you for that question. There are several steps, and one of the main steps that is not first under child support, but is going to the Department of Social Services to get some cash assistance. Back in the day, it used to be called welfare, and now it's called temporary cash assistance. You want to start off with that, because if there's not a second person to provide the support that the child needs, they usually start off there with the Department of Social Services providing either food stamps, temporary cash assistance, and daycare assistance. When they make that application, there's a major component when you receive cash assistance that you have to apply for child support services.
But let me stop you there. Not every woman who is a single mother right off the top needs TANF.
Correct.
I mean, we've got some women out there who are gainfully employed.
Yes.
And they still expect in the scenario that I shared, you know, they don't need TANF.
So when you don't need TANF, there's two other ways for you to get the Office of Child Support involved. You can either file on your own with the circuit court, and the circuit court will, they can bring a private action, and they call it a private matter, for you to bring the non-custodial party in court to discuss visitation, child support, or anything you need to discuss with regards to the child. Or you can file directly with the Office of Child Support. You can file online, or you can come into the local office. And what we'll do is you can fill out an application, and we will handle the legal part. So you can either handle the legal part on your own and go directly with the court, give that court order to us, and we will enforce that order. Or if that's not the avenue that you want to go into, you can come into our office or go online at dhs.gov, and then
DHS.gov.
Yes.
Okay.
And you can then look for your particular jurisdiction, and you can file for your services there.
When you say take care of the, you start the process for them, what does that entail?
What that entails is after you file an application with the Office of Child Support, we will gather all the necessary documents. We will also obtain any information with regards to the non-custodial parent. We will try to, in our expedited administrative process, bring the two parties together to try to have some mediation first. After that mediation, if it is successful, we can have an order, and we will file that order with the circuit court, and then we will then enforce that order. If that mediation is not successful, then we will end up ultimately filing a complaint and then going the legal route, filing the complaint, serving the other party, having a hearing in front of the magistrate, and then the magistrate will determine the child support guidelines and the child support order.
Under the best circumstances, how long would something like that take?
With our process integrating with the courts, it typically takes about 90 days to 6 months, depending on the nature of the case, how many children is involved. There's other mitigating factors, but if it's the best case scenario, is typically 90 days, 90 to 120 days.
Sophia, how is child support determined for a non-custodial parent?
So that's a great question. And I do want to quickly point out that, you know, custodial parents are also men. So, you know,
right.
I know we all...
Well, that's why I said, that's why I said for non-custodial parents, not for men.
Yeah.
Because, yes, it's, you know, women can be non-custodial parents as well. But please go right ahead.
Absolutely. So child support is determined by a guideline. And so every jurisdiction has a different guideline calculation. And what that entails is parties bring their financial documents to their court hearing in D.C., I'm speaking specifically for, where they will present those financial documents to the attorney, and the attorney runs a guideline. And so the guideline is calculated, and the respective share for both parties is calculated through that guideline. And that is how the guideline amount is determined.
Break that down for me, please. And let me just throw out, you know, some numbers. I hope you have your adding machine with you. But, you know, because it is very, very rare that in the child support calculation that the custodial parent is making the exact amount of money that the non-custodial parent is making. Rarely is one person making, you know, $75,342.42 and the other parent is making the same. It's going to be offsetting. So how is it determined how much a non-custodial parent will pay? Guideline, because I know guidelines are different from state to state jurisdiction. So how does that work?
Right, and unfortunately, I can't give you that precise of a calculation. Mm-hmm. However, the district, it's a percentage, right? And so the guideline will take into consideration both parties' income, any child care expenses that may be in play, any extraordinary medical expenses that may be present. And with that certain percentage, on our website, you can actually go to the guideline calculator and calculate it. The calculator will calculate both parties' income. Sometimes it is also based on how much time each parent has with the child. If the non-custodial parent has a substantial amount of time and they have an agreement that says the guideline may be run on a shared guideline. So there are different models based on the party's circumstances. And it's a case-by-case equation. So I would encourage those who are interested in understanding how much they have to pay to go to our website, which is CSSC.dc.gov.
Ho! Let's slow down. We need to slow that down for the people in the back of the room. So let me have that. You know, this is the first day of school, and you got to slow that one down.
It just rolls off.
I love my government workers. But they are the alphabet soup magicians of the world. So go ahead. Let's give it to me again, please.
Yes, you can go to cssd.dc.gov. I'll repeat it again. It's cssd.dc.gov.
Thank you. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about understanding child support. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. I'm sure you do have some experts here to kind of help you navigate some of the difficulties of child support. Let me go to Alex. Alex calling from Germantown. Alex, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Great show as usual. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So my scenario is I'm 55 years old, Montgomery County, and 20 years ago, 2000, I had a newborn son, and at that point, I had a 4 and 5 year old. Montgomery County, I brought my documents. I was either underemployed, not making as much money as my son's mother. She was a federal government worker, and I think it's the system is not fair. And it's literally, they said, "Wait a minute, you have a 4 and 5 year old son and a newborn. That newborn is going to get $780 child support." I said, "I have a 4 and 5 year old. I was divorced, etc." So my application, they didn't approve it. 3-4 modifications that I tried to lower it. Well, as of September next week, my 25-year-old is still receiving child support, but I'm a disabled war veteran, so they're taking out my SSDI. And I just think it's unfair because his mother, I worked in a federal agency with her, and she is a GS-14 and has been working for 25 years.
So hold on. So Alex, Let me stop you there because I know it's a lot. Let me see. What is your question? What's your question?
Well, the question is can you get an audit? Because I requested an audit to see, wait a minute, how much was really taken out or maybe shouldn't have been taken out if you from the child support. I've requested it several times and they gave me a printout of what was taken. But I'm thinking, is there any error that you can catch with child support?
Let me see if Samantha can try to address that. So first of all, and he threw out a lot of terms. First of all, what is a modification?
Okay, so a modification is a right to review. You want to take the time to reevaluate your child support order because you believe a material circumstance has changed your financial makeup, and you want the courts to reevaluate if my child support order should increase, or the child support order should stay the same, or the child support order should decrease. So when someone requests a modification, we ask for updated financials from both parties. We rerun the guidelines like Ms. Tyser mentioned, the complicated system, to see where do they land at this point in their financial lives. So there are other circumstances that make that doesn't make you qualify to modify your order. One of those is if that case is an arrears-only case, your child support order is closed, but you still owe back child support, the court may not listen to that. But everyone is entitled to file and request an application in the state of Maryland through their child support office to review, and their attorneys and staff will make the determination, is there a material circumstance, before they file with the courts, or they can file with the courts directly a request to review their child support case. Now, Alex, in terms of that audit that you are requesting, all of the child support jurisdictions in the state of Maryland, you can get a fiscal reconciliation of your open child support cases. And that fiscal reconciliation means they do a deeper dive of your child support to see what came in and what was dispersed. We reconcile all of the cases to make sure that here's the balance. And if you dispute the balance, there's an appeals process. So he can leave his number, and I can contact the director to help him.
Well, what I will do, he's in Montgomery County. I will leave the information on our website on WHUR.com, as we do every night, including the podcast, because there's a lot of information that we're going to be sharing. Alex, I do have another question for you, so I need you to stay with us. Adria, I believe that's the correct name, calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you as well. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR 202. 319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about child support tonight and what you need to know, and there is a lot to know. My guests are Sophia Hollis-Tyser, D.C., Deputy Attorney General for Child Support Services, and Samantha Phillips-Chester, Director of Prince George's County Child Support. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, here is the other question, and then I have something to ask you, Sophia, as well. But I'll start again with, you know, Samantha. He said he already had two children. So with a lot of non-custodial parents or parents who are, you know, who have divorced or what have you, they may be paying child support already for a child or two children or however many. If they have another child, what determines how much that next child gets? You know, how does that work? And let me see if I can, let me really simplify it. If you are married, you have a child, you get divorced, and now you are paying child support, let's say you're paying $1,000 a month, then you have another child, okay? And you are not involved with that parent. You are non-custodial parent of that second child. Does that mean that the first child that you're paying $1,000 a month only gets $500, and you're paying $500 for the second child? Or how does that work?
And again, and as going back to Ms. Tyser's breakdown of the guidelines, it all depends on how that calculation goes into place with the guidelines. So this person could have other factors, and it goes back to whatever additional responsibilities they have will factor into place. So I can't answer to say, because this person has three other children and now he or she or they will have another child support order. Yes, it will shift, but it all depends on that person's circumstances. So it's a guidelines driven on that sliding scale. But when people have concerns about those things, it is very, very important for them to go to their delegates, their legislatures, to really talk about the challenges on how to incorporate different families to consider when we start updating those guidelines. And I know the state of Maryland, we are revisiting those guidelines to provide some recommendations for legislation commission as well to make some updated changes with the times.
Alex, thank you so much for your phone call. Good luck to you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sophia, what about someone who has a fluctuating income as a non-custodial parent? So let us say, for example, if the father is the custodial parent and the mother of the child, let's say she's an entrepreneur, and one month her money's up, next month her money's down. How is that calculated? How do you address that?
So again, good question. Again, the court will look at pay stubs. They'll look at tax returns for a significant number of years to get percentage of what that person is earning. And so that figure would be used, especially when it's fluctuating like that, for the guideline. So again, it's a case-by-case basis, but the court typically likes to see a number of tax returns to get an accurate feel for what a person is making.
But, I guess, is there a process, though? Because I can only imagine the confusion and consternation of something like that, where, as I said, the non-custodial parent could be doing exceptionally well, and then something happens, and if they have those fluctuating incomes, it would seem to me that trying to go back to the court, you know, every time there is a frequent change would be untenable.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. However, our courts make the final decision, and sometimes, you know, it's necessary to have a hearing so that the trier of fact can make the final determination. You know, as an attorney who has handled these cases before, these cases can be very frustrating because on one end, you know, you have one party that says they are making enough income, and the other party then says, no, I'm not, right? And so sometimes the trier of fact has to make that determination with the evidence provided. So again, it's a case-by-case basis. Parties have to bring all documentation to the hearing. If parties are underemployed and they do have the potential to be making more, the court can make that finding. And upon that finding, then they can issue the appropriate amount of child support based on their finding of that.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about child support. If you have any comments or questions, give us a call. Adria, did I get that correct? Calling from Maryland?
That is right.
Oh, wonderful. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm owed about $46,000 in child support. And her father has been in and out of prison. I want to know why it is the state of Maryland doesn't do more enforcement, try to assist a parent who is doing everything on their own. Although I work, I don't make enough.
How old is the child? I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah. She's 14 years old.
She's 14. Okay.
6'1" and in the ninth grade.
Okay.
See her feet off and how expensive her, you know, items are.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I can only imagine. So help me with that, Samantha. So this is another one of those really difficult issues. If he has been in and out of incarceration, how do you even begin to collect child support?
Ooh, so thank you, Adria, for calling in. And this is unfortunately a scenario that we encounter on a regular basis. And in terms of enforcement, the courts look at, does the non-custodial party have the ability to pay? So even if although he's in and out of prison, they look into, when we try to enforce, to say, does this can this person pay the child support? So ultimately, if the person is not fulfilling their child support responsibilities as a duty to pay, it's not an obligation, it's a duty, that yes, they can incarcerate, but at the same time, and the incarceration for non-payment of child support is to ultimately for someone to pay a purge to apply to the child support.
And wait, if he, say that again?
To pay a purge to get the person out to apply to that child support.
What does that mean? I've never heard that before.
Meaning, when he, if someone is incarcerated for failure to pay child support, people bail you. I guess the layman's terms of bailing someone to get them out, that money can be applied to child support. But if the person doesn't have the ability to pay, typically the courts are not going to incarcerate or apply any type of enforcement. So what do we do as a child support office is we have other tools to help them, to make them whole. We have a fatherhood program to help them acclimate themselves to co-parent, and we also have a non-custodial parent employment program to enroll them to get them compliant, because there are individuals that are underemployed and unemployed, and give them the tools for success. So instead of all the time trying to enforce, we try to give them the tools in order for them to be positive payers. But unfortunately, there are some scenarios where that person may not have the ability to pay for a myriad of reasons, and we try our best to reach out and to do some community outreach to make them whole. I know.
That
doesn't really help me, but okay.
And it's unfortunate, and you know, I would love to, you know, call the non-custodial parent to compel payment, but it's only so many things we can do as a child support office, and that's the downside of the child support program.
Okay, Adria, I can only wish you, you know, the very best. Certainly these circumstances are difficult, and yeah, I'm kind of left speechless in, mm-hmm. in situations like this, because that your particular scenario, and I'm sure it's not unusual, but that is also part of a bigger, you know, social conversation about the health and where of our health and welfare of our children.
Yes.
Now, this is going to sound really strange, but in the unfortunate event that he would pass away, would she receive Social Security from the positions that he has had in the past?
Now, if he's worked in the past and you submit the appropriate documentation, because I don't work for the SSA, I do believe that gets passed down to the child. So in terms of that, yes. But as you mentioned, if he's been incarcerated several times or for a longer period of time, we don't know how much that Social Security is at the end of the day. But again, we try our very best based on our facts and our case scenarios to try to enforce that child support order within our means, mm-hmm. and within the law and policy of the state of Maryland.
Adria, thank you so much for giving us a call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Sophia, for non-custodial parents who are gainfully employed but refuse to pay in the District of Columbia, how do you enforce that? What happens to a non-custodial parent and they have a job? So how does that work? What remedies does the custodial parent have?
So we have a myriad of remedies that the custodial parent can receive as far as enforcement on their case. So administratively, of course, we all know that license can be suspended, and there's mixed reviews on that, right? So if a non-custodial parent chooses not to pay his child support...
Or hers, but go ahead.
A contempt status, right? Mm-hmm. So after 30 days, when the payment is due and owing, you are essentially, your case can come up for contempt. Your license can be suspended. Your passport can be revoked. There are levy administrative remedies that we can attach your bank account. And should those not work, our last resort is to file contempt before the court. So the remedies are administrative in nature to judicial, which is going before the court for contempt proceeding.
To me, it seems counterintuitive, however, that when you talk about the judicial process where you may, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if someone doesn't pay child support, they could be sent to jail. Is that correct?
They could be sent to jail. Yes, they could be. However, I do know that, you know, the child support program is moving away from the 1975 program where it focused on recoupment. Now it is more about engagement and helping customers on a more holistic approach. So, therefore, programs are trying to be more engaging with customers, trying to ensure they are educated on the process so that they will not wind up in a contempt proceeding, right? We're trying to engage our customers on what it means to have a child support order, what it means to actually file for a modification, and how do you get a right-size order before the court. So with this education, CSSC is hoping that we will have less cases in the contempt process.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jason, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, this is Jason. Yeah, I have a question for your guest.
Sure.
Situation that I was aware of, I used to work for the child support office back in the 90s. We had a situation where guy came in, the mother brought the guy in because of child support payments, and she wanted him to pay the child support, and he claimed that the child that he was paying child support for was not his. He argued it back and forth, and the court ordered him to pay the child support. He did that for 18 years, and on the 19th year, they found out that he was, in fact, not the father and should not have paid that child support because the real father came. They found out who the real father was, and they brought him into court. So my question is there a remedy for the payments that this gentleman made to the court for child support payments for reimbursement?
That's a really good question. How many times do we see that on these court shows? Lord knows. But obviously this is a real thing. So what about that, Samantha? You know, is it possible? I mean, we know that these things happen.
Yes, well, the first part is it possible that someone could be paying child support on a child that's not his? Now, that could be, like you said, on these shows. But in the state of Maryland, we now, before we move on, we adjudicate to ensure that you are the biological party, you know, father to that child before we move on to setting a support order. So I know he mentioned that he worked, you know, in the 90s, but now it is a standard practice that paternity has to be established before we move on. But there are other factors where the person could be in a marriage, right? They could have been in a marriage and then they could have divorced. And you know, in a marriage, you are legally presumed that parent. Now, is it biological? We don't know. But in terms of the legal eye, that if you're married, so if that person could have been married and then got divorced.
Let me just say that, I don't mean to interrupt, but let me just say this, because I know we're short of time. He was not married to the lady. And when they did the blood test, back there then, I don't think they did DNA testing. They did blood tests, and the blood test revealed that it was the same blood type as the mother.
So let me kind of expedite this. So again, and you're a child support expert, you're not necessarily a legal expert, and maybe Sophia may be able to jump in. But in a case like this, where technology, medical science, et cetera, has advanced. So what happens, Sophia, if a man discovers that a child for whom he has been paying child support is not his, but he was legally bound to do that? What legal... You're an attorney. What?
So, I am. So let me say this, that, you know, again, as Samantha said, you know, absent DNA testing or the real DNA testing, you know, if someone holds themselves out to be the father, especially for 18 years, the court can also look at, you know, the effect that has on a child. And, you know, in this stage of the game, at, you know, we are able to do affidavits of parentage where, you know, you can sign that you're the father, or you can take a DNA test. And that's why we encourage free paternity testing through CSSD. So if someone does hold themselves out to be the father of this child for 18 years, the court can find that you have to continue paying child support.
But that's not, but I think there's a, I don't think this is the distinction without a difference. Right. As I said, he was obligated to pay child support. Okay. In other words, the court told him that you are obligated to pay.
Right.
And so, as Samantha said, how did that get established? Was it through an AOP, an affidavit of paternity? Mm-hmm. He says that only the mother was tested through DNA, correct? If I'm hearing that correctly. So if there is not a valid DNA test that says, you know, he is excluded and he has held himself out to be the father via signing of an affidavit of paternity, he acknowledged he is the father until someone else steps up to say, hey, I am the father, right? And that's what I'm trying to say. The court mm-hmm. can say, all these years, you've held yourself out to be the father of this child. And what
that's
effect
true,
does that
though.
Have
that's
on
not
this
true
child?
In this case. I don't mean to interrupt, but that's not true in this case because he spoke out all throughout the 18 years that he was paying child support, that he held out, that he was not the father. And even his blood type was not the same as the mother's blood type. And so the blood type that the child had was exactly the same blood type as the mother.
Yeah. I think it sounds like he needs to find a good attorney.
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
So.
Yeah, because yeah, absolutely. That is bigger than this conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But
right. Thank you very much.
Sure thing. Thank you so much. Sorry to put you out there like that, Sophia, but,
answer the question on recoupment, you know, the person can file a civil suit to get the money back unless you know, the court issue an order that says otherwise. But typically there is no reimbursement.
Before I go back to the phone lines, Sophia, you said something that kind of struck me when we were talking about a non-custodial parent who does not want to participate in the process of paying child support, and you said you can't attach their bank account. How does that work if this parent has never paid child support? And does something happen in court, or is this person just, AWOL without paying a dime? How do you attach their bank account if they are not participating in child support or any legal process towards the financial welfare of the child?
So this would be an administrative remedy, and, you know, a child support agency would have to do its research, right? So there are financial institution data matches, that's FIDM, F-I-D-M. And so a child support agency would have to research a bank account of the non-custodial parent to see if there are adequate resources in that account to garnish. So we would have to have that information.
So let me be clear. So you're basically saying that the resources of your office would have to do some detective work and find out what his or her bank account is and then garnish
it. That's correct.
would they get a warning in advance of something like that happening?
Yes, we are mandated by federal regulations to give notice. So we have prescribed notices that have to be sent out to customers within a certain time frame. So yes, we would adhere to those regulations.
Wow. That's interesting. Kelvin, calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Kelvin. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a questionable issue. It's a past issue at this point. But I was paying child support for my son, and me and the mother, you know, we got back together, and we were together for quite a few years, right? And then, you know, we broke up or whatever. And about a month before he turned 18, I get a letter saying that I owe back child support. And I had the letter from the court that the child support was, I don't know if it's called suspended or canceled or whatever. And the only thing that saved me from having to pay that whole, it was like $75,000, was that I had school records that he lived with me. If it wasn't for that, I would have had to pay. I don't understand. That's not fair. When I had the letter saying that it was canceled.
So I can do an overview and kind of answer that. When parties, because we have this situation quite frequently, there's a child support order in place and then the parties reconcile, or meaning they get back together. They don't notify the Office of Child Support. So in the Office of Child Support eyes, or in the court eyes, there's an open child support. The child could have emancipated and money is still accruing because we were ordered by the court to manage the disbursement, the bringing in of the money and the disbursement of funds. So probably by the time before that child was about to emancipate and get this case closed, that's how that person, that's why you probably got the notice. So I would like to say to all the listeners, if you're in a situation where you are, there's a child support order in place, but you and the custodial party reconcile, or you're back together and you're an intact family, as they call it, or you have changes in custody, now the child is with you, you have to notify the child support office and notify the courts, because that's the best time to modify that order, to say it needs to be suspended or terminated or things need to be adjusted. So when you have changes in your familial status with your custodial party, you must run, not walk, call and blow up the phone to the Office of Child Support so that we can file the necessary paperwork and to make sure that we're all on the same page.
And I would imagine keeping good records is also,
and thank God that you you kept those records, because you would have ended up in court before the child turned 18 to try to prove something that you knew, right? And the custodial party already knew, you know. So I'm glad you kept those records. That was good.
Yes, but I had the letter though. I had a letter from the court saying that it was stopped. Understand? I'm not. You know, I didn't just let this go. I had the letter and everything when I went to court.
So you said you had a letter from the court saying that your child support had.
So here it goes again. So the child support, because sometimes there's some overlap. They may say that your child support was terminated, but we need something in that court order that says if you had back child support, and I'm not saying you did, but if you did, they need to say those arrears, that back child support was assessed at zero. Then we will take that order and to update our records, because they can say current support has stopped, but you may have back child support that still needs to be addressed. So you need to address both.
Yeah, I was clearing on everything. They said that, what the way the judge put it to me is that even though it was stopped, I'm supposed to continue to pay. I said, that don't make sense.
No, that doesn't make sense. And once again, sometimes the courts can give you a notice, and we're not notified. And that's why I said, if there's any changes to your child support, you always want to double check that the Office of Child Support is aware, because those letters are systematically generated, and we may not be aware, or your caseworker. But thank you.
Kelvin, thank you so much. Real quick, because I'm really short on time, and I've got to get this question in, Sophia. What do you do when you are a non-custodial parent, perhaps living in the District of Columbia, and the custodial parent lives in another state? How is that handled? Excuse me.
So that is handled through the UISFA process. And
through the what?
UISFA.
What is?
UIFSA. So it's the Uniform Intergovernmental State Act. And so that means that states are working together to achieve a child support order. So the custodial parent in one state will go to their child support agency, and they will initiate a case, and then they could send that case over to D.C. As a responding. And so we will work with that state to establish paternity, parentage, and or establish a child support order. So in those instances, the two state agencies will work together to come up with a solution.
Obviously, we could talk another hour about this, because this is such an important and complex issue. But I want to thank both of you, Sophia Hollis-Tyser and Samantha Phillips Chester, for talking to us and at least giving us some insight on how to address this. Ladies, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you for having us. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, August 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.